history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this amazing country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are seemingly ordinary Americans around you who have done extraordinary things, things we might not even be able to fathom, all for these United States of America and what it stands for. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in taking that one-hour journey each time, we sure do learn a lot. We are educated, we're entertained. So often we are inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And we are going to meet another World War II veteran in a bit, but today's program will be a little different as we learn about a ship that helps tell the story of so many veterans and so many aspects of life on an aircraft carrier. I trust that you had another memorable Thanksgiving, and one of the things that I'm so thankful for is the privilege of meeting so many remarkable veterans in just about every corner of our country. If you're a regular listener to Hometown Heroes, you've heard programs come your way from the homes of vets in just about every state, but also hallowed ground like the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., the USS Arizona Memorial in Hawaii, Bataan Death March Memorials in New Mexico, or museums like the Silent Wings Museum in Lubbock, Texas. I don't have time to go through the whole list of special places like that where so many veterans volunteer their time to pass on pieces of history, but I'm excited to add the USS Midway Museum to that list today. If you've been to San Diego in the last 10 or 15 years, surely you've seen the unmistakable outline of an aircraft carrier moored just below Broadway Pier. Not only is it a floating city, it is a living, breathing museum that millions of people have had the chance to visit. Over the next hour, we're going to meet three Navy veterans who spent a lot of their time on the Midway, which of course is named for that pivotal battle in World War II, which you've heard about on this program over the years from veterans who fought in it. We'll conclude in a bit with a 90-year-old World War II veteran who has an amazing story about a chance encounter on the Midway. But let's start with the Midway Museum's acclaimed historian and a man who's been involved in this project since long before the ship actually ended up here. Carl Zingheim was kind enough to give me a tour of the carrier's hangar deck and flight deck. I don't know where to start because this floating city has so many facets to it, and we're sitting here out on a little deck looking across that giant statue of the kissing sailor and nurse from Times Square in 1945. You ever get tired of coming out here and taking a look 360 degrees around this ship?
Oh, never. I mean, this ship has so much to offer, and the neat thing about this particular type of occupation is that every day is different. You don't know what's going to come up. And so it could be we'd have a VIP visit and you need some information, or we could have a school group come in as we often do. Or in the case I had just this past summer, we had a family come over who were a little nonplussed to see that a name wasn't mentioned. A relative of theirs had been lost operating off the Midway decades ago, and they'd thought that the name had been missed because we had an employee put up a memorial board up in the island where Pryfile is, but that was for his time when he was a Midway sailor. So they didn't understand that aspect of it. So fortunately, I was able to conduct them to our chapel where we do have, as complete as possible, a listing of everyone who had not survived their tour on the Midway. And it just so happened that their uncle's name was indeed listed on there. So you never know what can happen on the ship or who could come aboard or what duty may call.
And I'm sure when you're out in other parts of San Diego or anywhere around the country and people find out what you do, they probably ask you, well, what am I going to see if I come to the Midway? And that could be a long conversation, I'm sure, because this is such a gigantic ship. But what is your pitch? What do you tell people if they're trying to decide whether or not they should come down here and check it out?
The nice thing about the Midway, and we've planned this from the beginning, is to try and have something for everyone. So it's not just a visit for the guys. And so the mainstay of our tour experience is our self-guided audio tour. It comes with admission, and you conduct yourself listening to a headset of various aspects of the ship. We try to provide a cross-section of the city at sea experience, because Midway is virtually a floating, self-contained city. And it's also a warship, but it has a human element that you really can't disentangle from the steel of the ship. And so the nice thing about having the audio tours at your own pace, you're not stuck in a group of people that are being shepherded around one port or another. And the audio tour provides theater of the mind. It provides not only narrative, but it also has actual first-person interviews from the people who actually lived the experience on the Midway, as well as sound and musical effects. And so in addition to taking in the exotic world of an aircraft carrier that you could see and smell with your own senses, you can also take in the rest of the material and through the theater of the mind that our audio tour offers.
And it's so much more than just a ship. And maybe someone drives down on Harbor Boulevard here or something and sees the ship and like, oh, cool, an aircraft carrier. But I don't know if everyone realizes all the different things you can see on the ship. I mean, just for instance, how many different aircraft do you have on this ship, and what's the range of service as far as decades, the time period that these different planes flew?
Well, we are pushing 36 aircraft already. In fact, our latest one is going to be delivered on Monday after Thanksgiving. And so we have a range of aircraft that are consciously set to represent the Midway's period of operation. So we're more of a Cold War carrier, because the Midway missed World War II by a month. And so she was literally right there at the beginning of the Cold War, all the way to its very ending. She was decommissioned just after Operation Desert Storm. So the aircraft that we have are reflective of that. So you'll have everything going back to World War II type aircraft, like the F-4U Corsair or TBM Avenger, or even an SNJ trainer, which was used on carriers at the time as a personal liaison aircraft or a light transport. So everything from the propeller era at the tail end of World War II up through the latest combat types that we're seeing on the flight deck, such as the EA-6B Prowler and the F-18 Hornet.
And what's the new one that's coming in?
We're getting a rare mid-1950s North American FJ Fury. So it's great to be able to fill in that gap. It's a little tough to find that in-between 50s era stuff between World War II and Vietnam. So it's wonderful that we could get a vintage aircraft from the era when swept wings were starting to be adapted for fleet use, and it's kind of about the halfway point in the development of transitioning into jet aviation for aircraft carriers.
Of those 36 aircraft, do you have a personal favorite that you enjoy walking past here?
Well, I've always been partial to the F-4U, and the nice thing about the F-4U's delivery was that we accidentally had an event going on that actually had a live band. And so the aircraft was duly craned aboard from a barge. We have a restoration facility at Naval Air Station North Island, which is just across the channel. And so the aircraft was barged aboard, and we just happened to have a popular group playing ROCK in the USA as this war-winning aircraft from World War II was craned right on board. It's also neat, too, with that bent wing it has, that when the wings are up, it's kind of like an aircraft flexing its muscles.
Too bad you didn't have a big screen playing Black Sheep Squadron at the same time or something, right?
Well, we'll think we'll get that right the next time.
Pappy would be proud, no doubt. And you mentioned that this carrier, its own service history started right after World War II. But in so many ways, you've become a vehicle that tells the story of World War II, not just through veterans who are docents here, but the name of the ship, the Midway, a pivotal battle in World War II, and a lot of events. I think an annual event here to recognize the Battle of Midway. What have you seen from those events as far as the impact it has in telling that story to probably a lot of people who had never heard it before?
Well, one misconception we have to correct is to let people know that, no, this ship did not fight in the Battle of Midway. It's actually named for the action. To help bring that story back to life, we do have a holographic cinema that's specially constructed in our forward hangar bay that encapsulates what was at stake in that pivotal battle in 1942, as well as some displays out in front that provide a little more graphic detail about the action and the forces involved and such. So what's really nice about that approach is that between the conventional graphic presentations outside and the unique holographic experience on the inside is that you're really covering as many different aspects of the human nature of that combat action as we could possibly put in a brief period of time.
And I know you welcome from time to time guys who were involved in that battle, that were on aircraft carriers at Midway, maybe that flew in dive bombers at Midway, that saw the destruction, the explosions, the gunfire, the death, all of that. What have you gleaned from that? And if you had to encapsulate the significance of Midway here on the ship that bears its name, how do you explain that to somebody who says, well, what was the Battle of Midway?
Probably what would set Midway apart from other significant actions that had consequences afterwards, and I certainly see this with the people who attend, particularly the veterans of Midway who attend the annual Battle of Midway commemorations, is that individual actions still matter. At Midway, a lot of things could have gone one way or another had a decision been made going one way or the other. For example, we had a torpedo squadron commander who disobeyed a directive on what direction to fly with his opinion that he had a better idea where the Japanese actually would be. Tragically, he was proven correct, and his squadron went in completely unsupported. But he made that decision. Then we've got others where a dive bomber pilot who was leading a squadron was trying to set up for an attack, but the entire group leader, who was actually a fighter pilot, decided, everyone follow me. And before he knew it, two entire squadrons are piling in on his target and completely ignoring another one right nearby. So he broke off his attack, formulated a new plan in the middle of the action, and delivered an improvised attack on the other carrier. So these are really instances where the split reactions or the brave decisions, regardless of the consequences that individuals can make in time of distress or in time of combat, can really come to the front. And what's strange about Midway is that it seems to be an action of consequence where the individual decisions really did matter.
And have you gotten a feel over the years in interacting with those gentlemen who were there what it means for them to have this here, that they can come back to a ship named the Midway and see each other and relive those moments and understand the significance and everything that would have been different had they not prevailed in such dramatic fashion there?
Well, we certainly get that from the Midway veterans themselves, and that could be completely understandable. But what's remarkable about what you've just expressed is that it seems to cut across all the generations, all the people who served in carrier aviation over the decades that we've been blessed to host on board for various events. So this is actually a sentiment of service and dedication and, frankly, skill in a demanding profession that cuts across the boundaries of time and of the generations. And so we see that, of course, with the Midway veterans and the rest of the World War II veterans. But it also applies as much to the people who fought in Korea, to the people who flew routine missions at night and during the Cold War, the Vietnam veterans, all the way up through Desert Storm veterans we recently hosted on the ship. So those are sentiments, actually, that I have seen myself that really cut across the generations and apply to everyone who's been called upon to serve.
And you mentioned the holographic situation there. You also have some flight simulators here where people can get a feel for what it's actually like to fly one of these planes?
Even though we've got museum in our name, we're not strictly a place of static exhibits and dry displays and maybe a few people who talk about things. We've got much more to offer than that to our community here in San Diego. We have full motion flight simulators that you can actually pilot as you're flying a mission profile, with the ability to actually loop and roll while someone's shooting at you. So you've got at least a partial example of what it was like to fly missions in World War II, thanks to that technology. We also, of course, have the holographic cinema. We have interactions with people who are thoroughly trained and qualified on what they're talking about here on the Midway. So you can actually get a live first-person discussion with someone who actually was doing the job on the Midway. And, of course, the spaciousness of an aircraft carrier offers a unique venue right here on the harbor with a magnificent view for things like after-hours parties or special sporting events. And so this really shows that even in her retirement, the Midway is a versatile instrument.
Well, that takes a lot of manpower to pull all this off. How do you guys do that? How do you find enough people to make this ship run and stay open for people all over the world to come visit?
Well, we do have a modest staff, but really what makes the magic happen here on the Midway is having a dedicated core of hundreds, literally hundreds, of volunteers from around the region. Not all of them are San Diegans. Some actually drive considerable distances here to come in and devote of their own time willfully and giving of their own skill and education and experience to help enhance the guest experience here on the Midway. So while we could operate completely with the paid staff, the remarkable thing is that it's not necessary, especially in a community like San Diego, where we have people who are already dedicated to this line of work, this way of life. And so we are able to benefit from all these shared experiences and the generosity of these people who volunteer. And it's not just necessarily being a docent. We have a magnificent docent corps. They are also supplemented by volunteers who work behind the scenes, who work in restoring spaces, who work in doing refabrication of equipment. We also have people who work in the exhibits department, and we have people who work with guest services. So the neat thing about that is that we have a broad appeal for all kinds of talent bases that could lend themselves to our mission.
And if somebody's listening and maybe they want to become a volunteer out here, what would they have to do?
They simply have to go to the Midway website, midway.org, and we'll have all kinds of information on the site that you could go to if you have any interest in volunteering. And it makes no difference. You don't have to be a Navy veteran. We recently had a docent class, for example, who graduated its first civilians, people who've never even served in the military, but they're completely educated on it, so they're able to do the job as well. So what it really comes down to is, what do you want to do? And we can find something that's fun and engaging and worthwhile for you to do here on the Midway.
You know, I couldn't help but think, as you were describing the full motion flight simulators, if you have personally witnessed any of those World War II or Korean or Vietnam veterans who flew planes during the war going into one of those simulators and then stepping out and sharing a review. Have you gotten a taste of any of that? I'm just curious what they would think of it.
Maybe not the way you describe it, but we do have some people who have had some experiences with that, and they say, well, it kind of gives you a taste of what it's like. So there's nothing that really compares with the real thing. And you know what? As far as a simulation's concerned, I'm satisfied with that. If it comes where it's just an introduction, then it's really done a fine job.
Yes, simulators, thankfully, are not a life or death proposition. And they're just part of the appeal of the USS Midway Museum in San Diego. It's time for our first break, but we're going to have more from this amazing aircraft carrier when we come back. We'll meet two of the docents who volunteer their time aboard ship. And if you want to learn more, go online to midway.org or link to that website through hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where I have some photos of the ship and the men we're meeting today. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive, and then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. Gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.
This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a chance to explore the USS Midway Museum in beautiful San Diego, California. You could spend a whole day on this ship and not see all of it. And if you have young children, they might spend all day in the gift shop. Nearly three dozen historic aircraft dot the flight deck and the hangar deck below. And hundreds of volunteers add living history to the experience, really making it a different experience every day. I had the chance to explore the ship while there to announce the first ever college wrestling match on an aircraft carrier, the Battle on the Midway, featuring Fresno State and the Air Force Academy, and I couldn't help but think of so many veterans who've shared their stories here. Outside of the amazing Battle of Midway holographic video experience sits an SBD Dauntless dive bomber. I took one look at the decked-out mannequin in the rear-facing gunner's seat and thought of the late Don Hoff, who was in that very spot on an SBD at Midway and shared his story on Hometown Heroes back in 2008. If you want to hear Don's Midway memories, pull up episodes number 18 and 19 at hometownheroesradio.com. Just about every step you take on the Midway brings you face to face with something you might not have even contemplated before. And when you see the sheer volume of people working to make it all possible, you might be fooled into thinking this is a government project. Midway historian Carl Zingheim says that's a common misconception that couldn't be further from the truth.
We are self-sustained. We are completely privately run, a nonprofit, but we don't take a single penny of either state or federal tax money. So we're completely self-sustained thanks to the skills of our volunteer and staffing here, the magnificence of the ship, and the enthusiasm of the people who support us.
And for you personally, I mean, you've given me a lot of the what of the Midway and probably some of the how and certainly the when. But what about the why? What's the why for you? Why are you involved in this project? And maybe in addition to the why, you can tell me a little of the backstory of how the Midway came to be here and that whole background.
The Midway Museum story really goes all the way back to the early 90s when a North County businessman was interested in running for Congress. And he just needed to have a personalized plank on which to separate himself from the rest of the crowd. Now, he didn't get past the primary process, but his commitment to the concept of being able to have an appropriate place to venerate service and to celebrate the achievements of naval aviation stayed with him. And so through the next 20 some odd years practically, he dedicated himself to it and more importantly brought along a dedicated group, not just of former servicemen, but of businessmen, people who were successful in working in the local economy, as well as a broad cross-section of people from local politics, and put together an organization that worked very patiently through the challenging process of applying for and qualifying for approval to receive a formal naval vessel for public use. The nice thing about that was that we got a good mix of people to work with. And for me, that was really a thrill, being able, it's almost like being back in the service again. We were working with dedicated, highly skilled people all working towards a common purpose. And that can really give you a thrill sometimes. And so the nice thing about working with that group was that we knew what we wanted. We knew exactly where things needed to be. And the ship, of course, was eventually delivered. And the real commitment then came in being able to deliver on that promise. And I should say, I hope we really have. We're currently enjoying about a little over 1 million visitors a year now. And we've got wonderful reviews and ratings. And I really like to lay that as the part of the foundation of this commitment to having a quality salute to our veterans and to the legacy of naval aviation, to those people who really put in the time while leading their own lives before the ship actually became an institution.
And what's the personal motivation for you? How long you've been here, and how long you're going to continue to be here, and why?
Well, I'm a little bit unusual. I'm kind of a crustacean around here. I've been here since 1996, when you count the time when we were trying to get the ship. For me, it was literally the best application of my own personal education and interests. After my time in the service had ended, I was working in a sales capacity, and that's a very honorable line of work, but it really was kind of a tangential fit. And so fortunately, through my employer, I came across a group that was trying to bring an aircraft carrier to San Diego. And when I learned what they were really all about, what kind of people were working on this project, I said, you know what, I think that's for me. My lifetime interest in military history, as well as my background in serving in the fleet, I said, I can't think of a better way to apply both my personal experiences, my education, and my interests than working in some capacity on board the Midway.
And how long were you in the Navy?
Oh, just briefly, just 7 years in the fleet at the tail end of the Cold War. So I was blessed in my particular case of not being there when the bullets were flying back and forth. So those magnificent men before me and the young men and women who've come after me are the ones who really were giving the full measure of devotion. And for me, it was just a brief time between the conflicts. And so just the luck of the timing.
Well, thank you for serving, and thank you for what you're doing here. It's an amazing ship, and it has so much to offer people. And I guess that's my last question for you, Carl, is if there's one thing, one message, one concept, one piece of understanding that you hope a visitor to the Midway comes away with, what would you say that is? What is that takeaway you hope people get from this experience?
Well, we like to say that freedom is not free, but it's more than the slogan, especially after you've really taken the time to take the tour, listen to the audio narrative, meet our volunteers, our docents, and to really see what the challenges are on just doing work at sea, let alone in combat, and being able to work with other dedicated people and to see what commitment to something that's challenging and dangerous really means for a common goal, and that is, of course, preserving our way of life here. And I think we're largely successful in that, especially amongst an international audience where they get to see what American commitment is really all about. And that comes forth in everything we try to do here. And I'm very proud of the fact that that is something that we can be sincere in delivering.
You cannot visit the USS Midway Museum without that message coming through loud and clear. And speaking of loud, an added bonus is that with San Diego's large military presence, you're bound to have jets or helicopters flying over as you wander around the massive flight deck. You'll also learn a lot in hands-on demonstrations from former aviators like Tom Miller, who has volunteered here for the last 4 years. Let's find out why.
Well, it's one way to give back to the U.S. Navy and to San Diego. The Navy has shaped, I think, me as an individual. It's an honor to have been part of the active duty Navy, particularly as an aviator. So to give back by way of the Midway is a pleasure and an honor for me.
Do you have a particular plane that holds special significance for you on the ship?
There are several. The A-4 down on the elevator and the little fat boy S-3 that's right across the way here are a particular favor in my heart, I guess.
Well, I'm sure there's a story there.
I flew each of those aircraft.
Off of?
The Saratoga and the Kitty Hawk. A couple of years into the 80s, but the majority of my flight time was in the 70s.
How long were you in the Navy?
I was in the Navy active duty about 11 years, and then I stayed in the reserves for about 30 years.
How often do you guys bump into each other and swap some stories from flying these birds?
The Midway, since we have a briefing before we actually stand our watch, we collect probably 20 of us, 20 to 30 of us. There's a lot of sharing, a lot of give and take during those briefings, besides being serious about what we're doing for the next 4 to 5 hours here on the ship.
What's the most interesting question anybody's ever asked you here?
I'll answer it this way. The most uninteresting is, one, where's the exit and where's the bathroom? But the most interesting question I had was right after we started the actual Midway battle exhibit. I was standing watch in that particular area, helping point people to the right queue to go in for that exhibit. And a crew of about 5 or 6 individuals came up to me asking me questions about the exhibit. And there was an old lady, a small little old lady in that group. And as I'm talking, I notice her smiling. And so as we finished up the questions, she came up to me and said, you know, my father was in the Battle of Midway. He was one of the Marines that was actually in the trenches on the island. And I was flabbergasted. And she went on to explain how he was when he returned from that experience. That's an example of the opportunities you have to engage with the guests here on the ship that make it all worthwhile.
Well, and isn't that how it works? Here you are looking to give some of yourself, even though you've already given so much to our country, to give something back to the people here, and you come here and you're learning something you wouldn't have found otherwise, right?
That's correct. Absolutely. And I think all the docents, all the other volunteers have a similar story or several.
If you had to put the purpose of this museum into a paragraph, how would you explain that? Why is this important? Why are you and all these other volunteers here? What's the message that you're hoping to convey?
To underline the importance of the U.S. Navy and the armed forces to the strength and the viability of the United States. That's the number one reason for the ship being here. Way down the list would be the entertainment value of the ship to the general number of guests that we have each year, each day. And somewhere between that first priority and that priority as entertainment, there's another reason for the ship to be here, and that's education for our young folk. The ship does a marvelous job in leveraging the shape of the ship, the various operations of the ship, to teach grade school kids, high school kids, physics, mathematics, civil education, government education, all those gamuts of a well-rounded education.
How long do you plan on continuing to come out here and volunteer?
As long as I'm of value, then I'll probably be here.
And I've got to ask, since you know you mentioned those two aircraft, the A-4 and the S-3, that you spent time in, did you have a particular memory that you often reflect on, or an experience in one of those planes that's something you could never forget?
Not one that I could probably repeat here, but I would give a sea story. Very early in my career, we were practicing traps, another aircraft, S-2s, and we were getting ready to launch an aircraft, one of the S-2s on the bow cats. And so the aircraft's winding up its engines to be launched, and where the aircraft was sitting, the catapult officer couldn't see the hand signals of the pilot. So one of the engines starts unwinding, in other words, it's starting to explode. And the catapult officer launches the aircraft anyway. Well, it angered the pilot, so he immediately, as soon as he got airborne with one engine, he immediately turned downwind to set up and land, so he traps right back aboard. He doesn't shut the airplane down. He just leaves it sitting in the arresting gear, comes out of the airplane and runs forward and slugs the catapult officer for that mistaking launch of him.
Oh, I can see how that would stick with you. I guess that's something I should ask you, too, because very few of us have ever or will ever experience it. What does it feel like to launch off of one of these things and then to land on it?
To launch, it translates to maybe a few seconds where your heart isn't beating. It kind of feels that way. You're under a lot of G-force, a lot of acceleration of your body during those few seconds. So to me, the best way to explain it to the general populace is your heart stops beating for a couple of seconds till you're airborne. And landing, certainly the daytime landings are a real thrill. It's a really, they can't pay you enough. And the adverse at night, they can't pay you enough. So I'll leave it at that.
Well, Tom, thank you for your service, and thank you for sharing a little bit about that. Is there anything else you think people should know about the Midway?
Just come and see us any day. We're open 7 days a week.
Yeah, not exactly around the clock, but open from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. every day with the last admission at 4 o'clock. Break time again, but you will not want to miss the next gentleman we're going to meet. He was a rear-facing gunner in SB-2C Hell Divers during World War II. He's volunteered on the Midway since it opened as a museum in 2004, so he's met thousands and thousands of people. But I don't think you're going to believe the story of one chance encounter that might just give you goosebumps. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly 250,000 EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode originating from the historic USS Midway Museum in San Diego. We've heard from the ship's historian as well as a former Navy pilot who volunteers his time here, and now we get to meet Joe Neves, a 90-year-old World War II veteran who's been a docent here since the museum first opened to the public.
14 years I've been here and have enjoyed every day that I can, right here, 14 years.
Why do you do it?
For my shipmates that are not here anymore, try to keep them in the memories of others in the younger generation.
And you're set up here right next to some storyboards of your service, of other aircraft carrier stories, and you're right under the wing of a pretty significant aircraft as well.
It's an F-4U Corsair. It was a very famous fighter during World War II. That really helped us against the Japanese.
I bet you saw and heard a lot of those take off.
A lot of them take off. Well, it was the fastest aircraft we had. 405 miles an hour straight away, and it's 75 years old. So it saved a lot of guys. A good fighter.
I want to get your story, but take me back to the beginning. I understand your folks were immigrants from Lisbon, Portugal, but you were born in New York City. What was your life like growing up?
Well, my parents didn't speak English. I lost my mother when I was 8 years old, so my father had to raise me, and he didn't speak English. And just went on, and when the war broke out, I begged him to sign the papers and let me go at 17 years old. I was an only son, and he was having a hard time to raise me anyway. But I went in, and thanks to him, whatever happened to my future, which I'm very proud of, It was all up to, it was all his doing.
Well, I want to hear more about that, but I also want to ask you about a day when you were only 14, because I bet you remember December 7th, 1941.
Yes, I remember 1941. I was just coming out of the theater, my friend and I. They had a special newspapers of war, that war had broken out, that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor. And I think at that time I was just going on 14 years old. And I said to my friend, I said, when we get a chance, you and I, when we get 17, let's join the Navy, you know? And by God, we did, and I've got pictures of it on the board here of him. Of course, all my friends, they're all gone now. Everyone that I served with is gone. I guess I'm the last of the ones that I know.
And when you first went into the Navy, what did you think you were going to be doing?
Well, I asked to be in the Air Force, Naval Air Force. I wanted to get on a carrier and fly. I wanted to fly.
Were you hoping you'd be a pilot?
No, I would never be that great. I would never be that good, but I went to gunnery school, and that was my thing. I was happy doing what I was doing.
And I'm looking at your flight jacket here, and you've got that SB-2C Hell Diver right on the sleeve. Was that the first dive bomber you were in, or was there another one before that?
Well, there was the SBD. It's way down the other end, and it was a little smaller, didn't carry much armament. But this one here was a little bigger. It carried rockets. It had four 500-pound bombs, or it could carry a torpedo. It wasn't fast, but it did the job.
And tell everybody where you sat on that plane and what you had to do.
Well, I sat backwards on a dive bomber with twin 50 caliber machine guns at an altitude of 13,000 feet, while our fighter planes were protecting the torpedo planes so they could drop their torpedoes. And then when the Japanese came in and we saw they were clear, then we would dive down. Of course, my canopy would be open. I would be sitting backwards. I couldn't move because of the pressure, and I didn't know where we were going. All I could see was the sky, and it wasn't until he pulled out that anything that was below me, I didn't ask who they were. I just did what I had to do.
That's a great description. I've talked to a lot of rear-facing gunners, but I don't know if I've ever heard it described quite like that. Have you ever been on a roller coaster that came close to that feeling?
No. Well, when I was young, I thought the roller coaster was a great thing, but nothing like that, because every time you go up, whether landing and taking off on a carrier, any pilot that tells you he's got 1,000 landings or 500 landings or whatever, let me tell you, he is scared, just as scared as I would be for everyone that I went on, because the ocean, it doesn't stay the same, nor does the ship. So it's quite a dangerous job. Other than submarines, I think it's a very hazardous job. But I loved doing what I was doing.
And I guess you have to have a lot of trust for that pilot, huh? Because that's got to be awfully scary. You can't see where you're going. You can't move because the pressure's so great. And your life is in his hands.
Yes. He was 20 years old. I'm 17. I thought he was an old man already, you know. And he was quite smart, but he was a great pilot. I remember one time we were coming down at 65-degree angle, and he kind of overshot the target, and he had to pull that nose back in. Where I was sitting, I would be almost in front of him instead of him in front of me. But he did the job, and he did it well. I'd like to say something about our squadron commander of the Top Hatters. Top Hatters are now 100 years old. I wear it proudly on my jacket, as the others did. And what he did was he sunk a Japanese battleship in one of their harbors by himself without his gunner, and won the Navy Cross. Very proud of him. That's why I keep his picture posted here with the others. His name was Burke.
Lewis Burke.
Top Hatters are famous, and we're proud of it. And I think right now I'm the only one that I know of on this ship as a volunteer to wear the Top Hatter patch.
You are unique among the folks here, and you had a unique role. You mentioned being the gunner and having those twin 50s facing rear in this SB-2C, what were the situations where you would actually have to fire those twin 50s?
Well, whenever we went out on a mission, whatever the mission was, as I said, I have no control of anything until he takes a dive and we try to complete our mission. We can't fight the enemy fighters because they're too fast for us. And our plane at that time, We were lucky to do 240 miles an hour, and these Zeros would made of plywood would just fly right by or take it down. So we did our job, got out of there while our fighter planes were trying to protect us by fighting the Japanese fighters. We did the job and head back to the ship.
And you told me about the descent, about the dive, and what that felt like. But what about when he pulls back up after he's dropped the bomb?
Well, that feels great. You know you're going home. That's just great, I'll tell you. That's a feeling, boy. You're looking around, making sure there's nobody on your tail. And you just hope to get back in one piece. That's it.
Well, you say that, and I wonder if you had some close calls where you weren't sure you were going to make it back in one piece.
Well, I think the worst thing that happened to me was when my shipmate, we were both our first time off of an aircraft carrier, and he was before me. We took off, and coming back 5 hours later, I was right behind him. We were about 2 miles out behind, and when they came in, they missed the cable, slid over, and slammed right into the tower. And, oh, did that scare me? We got a wave off, and I didn't know whether we were going to make it or not. That's the scariest thing I had. There were others that saw a lot better action than I did. I was very lucky because the older fellas, they really looked after us young guys, and they called us kids. It's just like when I had my first flight, and I came back. I hate to tell you, but I did kind of wet my pants. And when I got out, the chief says, "Well," he says, "I see you finally made it, didn't you?" I said, "Yeah." I said, "But I didn't think it was going to be like that, you know." He says, "That's the trouble with you kids. You saw too many John Wayne movies." He says, "Did you ever see him get killed?" I said, "No." He said, "Then you better pray to God you don't." That's that.
That'll get your attention. You know, you mentioned getting your father to sign for you so you could go in at 17. Why was that so important to you? Why were you so determined to go serve?
Why? Because it was my country. They did everything that for my folks, my grandfather, grandmother, my father, and for me. What greater country could you be living in than be able to come here? I asked my father one time when I made pretty good. I said, "Dad, wouldn't you like to go back to the old country?" He says, "What did the old country ever do for me? I love my customs. I love the music. I love the people. I love everything. But you can't beat America," he says, "and I'm American." That's why.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm looking at your display here, and it says you served in Alaska as well as the South Pacific. Two very different situations there. What were you doing in those two spots?
Well, of course, the Japanese. The other was the invasion of Alaska. A lot of people didn't realize that there were at least 25,000 to 30,000 Japanese up there, and we had to get them out. So we were going to start that invasion as we did Okinawa, go up there. But they didn't send any carriers. They sent us up with the Army Air Force was up there, and that's how I flew in the B-24s in the Navy version of the plane. Well, the Marines came in, and the ships were shelling the shorelines and everything else. We were getting no response for 4 days. And then finally, what happens? We find out that they had moved out 5 days before we got there and went back to Japan, which was a very happy thing for us. Yeah, that's about what happened, yeah.
So that was in privateers or what?
That was a privateer, yes, PB4Y2.
How much more fun was that, being actually able to look out and not be facing backwards? And you probably had a much different feeling of flying in those.
Well, the thing is getting used. You know, you see, if you look at a B-24, like my friend Walter, he was a gunner, a waist gunner on a B-24 in Italy. And he explained what was happening. Then I knew when I got to be a waist gunner on a B-24, when you're firing 50 caliber machine gun and you got 50 caliber shells just shooting all over your feet and your legs and you're trying to balance yourself, that's not easy. Let me tell you, it's like on roller skates. So that's where the shells have to go someplace, and people never think about those shells that you're standing on trying to balance yourself. That's life. But I thank God he's been good to me. I'm here and I'm talking to you, and I owe it to the man up there. And I never thought I'd live to 90. I just never thought that would happen to me.
Well, you're going strong at 90, and you're not just talking to me. You must have talked to thousands of people here over the last 14 years. What is the biggest message that you want them to hear when they come and see the Midway and they get to meet you?
When they come to meet me?
What do you want them to know about World War II and what you and all those 16 million other Americans did?
I want them to know that we do care, not just for ourselves, but for others. Others that are less fortunate than we are. And that's why we probably can't save the world. We can't be policemen to the world. But my thing of being proud of what I did was I fought for my country. I fought for the United States of America, for its freedom. I didn't fight for anybody else's country. I fought for America, and I'm proud of it. And my son served in Vietnam. I'm proud of him.
I got to ask you real quick, you're here a lot, but have you taken one of the honor flights back to Washington, D.C.?
Unfortunately, I didn't have to because I was in the Foreign Service in Washington, D.C. for 8 years.
So, but have you seen the World War II Memorial? Have you been back there for that?
Oh, yes. I watched them build it. Uh-huh. I was living there. I lived right across the river in Virginia. Yeah, I watched them do the whole thing.
What did that mean to you, to see that come together and to see what it's meant for so many in all these years since, more than a decade since they built it?
Well, it means an awful lot for one reason. Those who tour D.C. and see that memorial will never get to learn it in school because they don't teach it anymore. That's the sad part. We're forgotten. People come up and say, World War II. You know, that happened to me. There was a fellow from my father's country. He served in World War I. And he was talking to me about it. And I said to myself, my God, he's talking, 25, 30 years ago. I'm talking 73 years ago, you know. And here we are. He was telling me what was happening. And he was an immigrant also, a Portuguese immigrant, and fought for the United States. And what happened? I knew nothing about World War I until I got into the higher grades in school. Why they stopped it in school, I don't know. But I don't think it's a fair thing that we fought so hard to keep our country free and they don't teach the younger generation what really saved this country.
Well, I'm sure you're making a difference by telling that story here at the Midway. And I've got to ask you, since you spent so much time here, do you have a favorite spot on this ship or a favorite thing to look at that you think anyone coming to visit should check out?
The favorite thing that I enjoy most are the people who come here, who honor this ship and honor those that served on it, as well as the others that served in the military. That's the greatest reason I come here for, is because of those who can't.
Well, Joe, I just want to say thank you for serving our country. Thank you for what you're doing here at the Midway. Is there anything else you think people ought to know?
Love America. Love America, protect it. That's it.
So I guess you never know who you're going to run into here on the Midway. What's the story about this picture of you and another sailor there in your dress whites?
It happened this way, that there were people here standing here while I was describing what I did in the Navy. And there were an elderly couple in their 60s. And they were just standing on the side. When the people left, they came over, and the older the man said to me, that little short guy in the picture, he says, is that you? And I thought by myself, well, hey, I can get to talk to him. I says, yeah, that's me. He said, well, what about that real tall guy there? Do you know him? I says, yeah, we spent almost a year together, shipmates overseas. He says, do you remember where he's from? I says, yes, he's from Chicago, Illinois. I said, he's a Polish kid. He says, do you remember his name? And I says, yeah, his name's Walter Roblewski. Guy stood there, tears rolled down his face. His wife was right next to him. I guess they were in their 60s. He said, that's my father. His father was 19 years old. Both of us are 19 years old in that picture. He had never seen his dad in a Navy uniform. And when he saw it, he just cried. And I took the picture and I just gave it to him. And I never saw him again, but that makes me feel good. It's worthwhile coming down here to even put up these pictures that someone recognizes someone that they're missing.
You just never know. And I'm sure a lot of people are getting goosebumps right now just hearing you tell that story. Do you still get goosebumps when you tell it?
I do. I get the feeling because just to watch that fellow standing there and then come up to me and just so quietly says, That's my father. I mean, you know, I'm not expecting somebody to say 73 years later, that's my dad. I never seen him in a sailor uniform.
What a story. What a moment. And who knows what kind of eye-opening moments might be in store for you when you take a little time to see history come alive at the USS Midway Museum in San Diego. Again, the website midway.org. I have that linked for you as well at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks again to Carl Zingheim, to Tom Miller, and to Joe Neves for their time. And thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you once more that freedom is not free.